It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
That is correct. And either I'll say, and now here's Julie Wisenhorn, or here's Mary Meyer, or here's Teresa Rooney. I don't have to choose. They're all here today. This is a first. You know what? I thought about this a couple days ago with when Mike Lynch was talking about these the stars, that the conjunctions in the heavens.
it's just all lining up.
This won't happen again until 2023, I think.
Like every 7 years.
But it's great to see you all here. And for folks that are regular listeners, know your expertise, Julie, Mary, and Teresa. And this is kind of fun. But in all honesty, you're here for... besides to help our listeners.
Yeah, we're here for the photos.
We're going to
get some live pictures of you, Denny, all of us, with what it really looks like when we're down here. People hear us, but now you'll be able to see us with some promotion through Extension.
Now, next time we'll do this in the summertime, we can wear T-shirts.
Exactly.
Instead of six layers.
It won't be so cold.
Something like that.
Good Lord.
What do you people who love gardening do when I'm looking at the screen now? It's a minus two. It's two below zero. Do you have dreams of
seed catalogs? I've been repotting my orchids. That's been nice, and patrolling them for pests.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Mary?
Well, we do spend much more time looking at our houseplants, that's for sure. So I'm repotting some plants, looking at plants. This is when citrus blooms. So all of us who have calamondins and the limes and lemons, the winter is when they bloom. So we see some beautiful flowers on those and fragrance now. So it's not all bad.
And Teresa, you're...
And there's people like me who have cats, which will destroy every houseplant. So I've given up on houseplants. And apparently there's a lot of other master gardeners out there that don't have houseplants. So we have to think, what can we do in our landscape next year? So you can look outside, you look at the bones of your garden. Where do I need some stuff? Look at the pictures that we tell you to take all year long. Look at those pictures and see what's missing. What can I change?
That's a good point.
And then you look at those pictures and say, okay, now let me get my seed catalogs out. And then hopefully that will limit your buying of 4,000 packages of seeds, because you realize you only have a little city lot, and so you can't have everything in the world, so you can really select. And then we watch gardening shows and pretty pictures and take out our gardening books.
We dream, and we go, and
the interns today are out at the Arboretum learning for the new crop of master gardeners. So we are still gardening. Gardeners garden 365 days a year.
Go ahead, Mary.
I was just going to say, so Teresa was talking about the seeds. So what seeds you have left over from last year? You know, we do recommend buying new seed every year, but we keep things from last year. So where is that old seed? What have you got left over? Maybe you can remember something that didn't do well when you see those seeds, and really start making a list of what to buy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let me give the phone number. And the text number.
Sounds good.
If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, boy, are you in luck today. A lot of help in studio. 651-989-9226 or send a text 81807. We did get, as regular listeners know and you guys know, another Creeping Charlie question.
Yay!
Oh. Of course.
Let's see. They wanted to know earlier. In fact, this came in earlier this morning about putting preen. Will that eventually kill or keep? That won't do anything.
Preen is a pre-emergent herbicide. So, in other words, if you were seeding for Creeping Charlie, then it would prevent that seed from germinating. But it's not going to do anything on the actual plants themselves.
I think some of the preen is even a fertilizer. So you would be feeding the
Creeping Charlie. Might even be better.
How about that? 651-989-9226. We've cleared the line. So if you want to ask your garden question via phone, call it in, or if it's easier, send a text 81807. You know what I have to mention? Don't have to. I want to. By the Yard, the folks that make that great patio furniture down in Jordan, Minnesota, sponsor the show every week.
Thank you so much.
Check them out, bytheyard.net. They're good folks. Still a family-run business. Okay. There's another Creeping Charlie question. Somebody loves to make tea. I don't have, as any of you, we've had this question before.
We've had this question before, and I've just seen another article on people using it for tea.
Good. Because it's,
so it's a mint, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, right, just like even bergamot, the bee balm perennial can be used. So, it is edible. Whether or not you like it or how strong it might be quite different.
I think I'd be careful about using it, though, because a lot of people treat it.
Oh, with
and
herbicides.
You might be actually consuming that herbicide. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Take care.
Yeah. Text number, boy, we're getting a bunch of calls, too, but the text number is 81807. Well, all this cold weather, texter says, and hardly any snow on the ground, that's so far, in our area. Will our lawns and plants need more or different care than usual this spring?
Yeah, this could be a big issue because the snow is the poor man's mulch. And it is going to snow, hopefully, now Sunday night before it gets really cold. But when we don't have a snow cover, the crowns of plants are much more likely to freeze.
Now, I know you guys can't endorse certain brands, but let me paraphrase this. If I choose, texture says, not to buy every type of plant fertilizer, which one is most recommended? Is there a type rather than a brand name that you guys can mention? I mean, like, I could say Miracle-Gro or whatever.
Well, I like to, if people are, especially if they're new gardeners, some of the extended fertilizers, the ones, the granulars that you put down, you just sprinkle them on the soil and just let it go. And they last about 30 days. That really works because then you don't have to think about it if you're a new gardener and you can think about other things. The liquids that you have to mix up, you have to.
Right. That's right, Teresa, because the slow release means it's going to be available over a long period of time. So it's kind of a quick release like the liquid or slow release with the granular. And then the granular can vary with the release time. But the insoluble on the label will tell you it's not soluble, not slower release. So, and then after that, there's the three numbers, the N, P, and K, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So, yeah, we don't recommend a brand, but it's there is quite a bit of variation.
I think also you have to remember what you're actually going to be fertilizing. So there are certain, if you're growing vegetables, they're going to be, you're going to be doing everything you can to produce the fruit on the vegetables.
Sure.
So it's going to need probably a little bit more fertilizer than, say, just a coleus or something like that you have in a container. And containers will need fertilizer in them because there's nothing for them to draw from.
That's
except,
a good point.
You know, around like in a garden soil.
And if you have your gardens, your native plants, you don't want to be fertilizing them. Most of your perennials don't need a lot of fertilizing. They get too big and floppy, and you don't need that.
If you're just tuned in and hearing all these wonderful voices, we've got a lot of help in studio because of a photo shoot today, and we're so glad that even in spite of the cold weather, that Julie, Mary, and Teresa are in studio helping you out. So call us or send a text, 81807. We do have a bunch of callers. Let's see before we break if we can't help a couple of folks. Marcia in Burnsville. Marcia, what's your question, please?
Hi, I have solved my Creeping Charlie problem.
Oh, you have?
A lot of us forget that Creeping Charlie was originally sold as a ground cover.
Exactly.
That's correct.
So I have decided to regard it as a ground cover.
Excellent.
It is very low. It does not grow high like grass, so you don't have to mow it as much. And I have never had, I had an infestation of worms on my Creeping Jenny, but the worms would not touch my Creeping Charlie. So my idea is I'm going to allow Creeping Charlie in my lawn as much as it wants to be there, and I'm going to focus my time on my garden. So I'm wondering if we aren't concentrating too much on trying to get rid of it and just live with its benefits.
It's all in how you look at it, right?
That is a possibility, and I think if your neighbors are okay with that,
I was just going to say,
and if your husband is okay with that, right?
Yeah. Well, that's
a good point.
Embracing really Creeping Charlie is one approach. I've heard more and more people doing that. So,
all right. cuts down on the mowing, too, doesn't it?
Cuts down on the mowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Barb is calling in from Rochester with a question.
Oh,
Barb, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning. I also, as you are, looking, of course, at seed catalogs. I'm looking at golden beets. I understand they're a little bit harder to grow, but I've had them. They're delicious. Are they harder to grow than regular beets, or is there something special I'm supposed to do with golden beets?
No, I don't think they're harder to grow, Barb. I think that they are Maybe a little slower, but maybe not quite as large as some of the other ones, because the other red beets are ones that we've had, and there are many Detroit red and the old favorites there. But no, I think you should go ahead and try that. They need moisture for the germination, and they need a friable or a looser soil so that the roots can develop. And so the limiting factor I've had with beets is enough water early in the season. But I would urge you to try the golden beets.
Okay, great. Yep. You know what? We need to take a quick break. We have more show to come. This is our Smart Garden Show. Julie, Mary, Teresa, all in studio helping you out today. So take advantage of their expertise. Call in your question or send a text. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by our friends at Buy the Yard Patio Furniture. You have a lawn or garden question. We have a full studio of help today, so take advantage of it. Julie's here, Mary's here, Teresa here as well, answering your lawn or garden questions. 651-989-9226. Or again, if it's easier, send a text, 81807. See who we have on the phone. Carrie is calling from Ham Lake, I believe. Carrie, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
We're great.
What my question is 1 year, I haven't done this for a few years, but 1 year I used mulch on my tomatoes. And we did it before we left for 4th of July. And when we came back, it had the seeds in it had germinated.
Oh, this is
and so I'm
straw?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is there a specific kind of straw that you get so that it doesn't do that, or is that just something that straw does and you have to do something to prevent that?
Well, you'd be looking for straw that's called clean straw, which means that it doesn't have seeds in it, but I don't know if you can be 100% sure all the time. It'd
no.
be really difficult. So,
And if things sprout, you just pull them up. And right. then they decompose, and so it's more fertilizer.
You could also put a pre-emergent down, I suppose, if you haven't seeded your plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our one problem was we left for 7 days.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we didn't, you know, and I didn't think anything would germinate, so it didn't. So it's called clean straw?
That's what they call it.
It might be a little hard to find. I mean, the farmers try to make the straw without seeds, but you never know what's going to get in there.
Right. Don't want to get hay.
No, don't get hay. No, that's right. For feeding animals.
So do I put preen down before I put it down then?
Well, if you put preen down, you gotta remember where you put that preen, because next year when you try to put in beets or your seedlings, you could have a problem because preen has quite a residual. So,
does it? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of a trade off. I think you're better off using a mulch.
Definitely.
And trying to decrease the seeds that are in there. If you see any oat seed heads or anything, you know, take those out when you're putting the mulch
uh-huh.
down. But I think in the long run, you're ahead to use the mulch and just still put up with the seedlings that come with it.
You know, you could also let the chickens into that.
And
once the seed starts sprouting, the chickens would love to eat that. And the ducks, they would love to get in there. And yeah.
Well, Teresa has chickens.
Yeah, chickens, yeah.
She does.
They don't work for a living. They're just freeloaders, but yeah.
Carrie, thank you. 651-989-9226. We're going to grab some text messages in a moment. But Willie is calling from Golden Valley with a question. Hi, Willie.
Hello.
I'm
going to turn off my radio.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Turn it back on, though. Don't forget to do that.
Susan Blatch is a good friend of mine, I want to say.
Well, she's a great lady.
Sewing machine man, and I take care of all of her equipment.
Excellent. Susan's one of our producers.
Oh, nice. Wonderful.
Yes, Susan. But anyway, Marcia kind of beat me to the punch a little while back about Creeping Charlie. I have just stopped fighting with the neighbors and let it grow for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's just absolutely beautiful. I've got lawn service people that won't even come near my yard because they don't want to get that stuff stuck on the bottom of their
Which is good. That's exactly one thing you have to worry about, yeah.
Yeah. But here's my question. I've got like 50 different kinds of lilies, 50 different kinds
nice.
Of hostas, and built-up garden beds, and all kinds of oak and maple and black walnut trees in my yard, and the leaves came down kind of late this mm-hmm. year, and I just used my blower and put them right on top of all of my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if I can just use that instead of buying a bunch of bags of mulch and just leave it there this year in the spring.
Yeah, and actually, if even better would be if you mowed up the leaves and then dumped them on the garden because the leaf pieces would be smaller and they wouldn't mat down as readily. The one concern I would have is just to pay attention to the fact you have black walnut.
Right.
And black walnut has a compound called juglone in its leaves and its fruit and its bark
roots.
And its roots and everything. And it can prevent the growth of some plants. Now, I don't know. I don't think hosta is one.
No, it's not. No, hostas are okay. I'm not sure about lilies. But if your lilies are fine now and you've had the oak or the walnut for a while, it's probably okay.
The leaf mulch is awesome for the overwintering of pollinators, too, the queen bees that need to overwinter. So you're really doing a double benefit there and actually reducing your work, too. You're not hauling it. Mm-hmm. To a compost site, having to bag it, all that stuff.
You know, you're recycling all the energy that's on your property, and that's a wonderful system to get into because then it just keeps feeding. It just is a nice loop.
And this year, with no snow, you've got your mulch.
Right.
For free.
Protecting your plants. Mm-hmm. Right? I just bought a leaf shredder.
Yeah.
I'm not bagging any more leaves. They're all going right back.
Into the
outstanding.
Garden. Yep.
You know, I've decided that the three of you should be here every week.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, it is.
You're here all the time. I think you have a cot here, don't you?
Yes, I do have a cot here. All right. But it's great to have all three. If you're just joining us in studio, Julie Weisenhorn, Mary Meyer, and Teresa Rooney, all in studio at the same time, answering your lawn and garden questions. We're going to take a quick break here. We have another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. I know we promised you some text messages. We'll get those answered, and phone calls as well. Let me give you that phone number again, 651-989-9226. Text number is 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show, brought to us every week by our friends at By the Yard down near Jordan, Minnesota. Check them out, bytheyard.net, the best patio furniture in the whole world. If you're just joining us, we have all three of the brain power we have individually. Yes, the triumvirate. As I said, it's like a conjunction.
I've been wanting to say that all morning.
We do have three stars that have joined us today, and that
they are
is
aligned.
Julie, Mary, and Teresa, answering your lawn and garden questions. So I said earlier, take advantage of the folks here all together at the same time. Call us with your lawn and garden question or send us a text. 651-989-9226, text 81807. Ginny is calling from River Falls. Ginny, good morning.
Hi, Ginny.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, I did not get my lilacs trimmed. They're probably about 5-6 years old, and I try to keep them down so they don't grow too tall. I did not get the old blossoms cut off last year when I should have. Is that going to stop some of my blooms coming for this year?
No. Mm-mm, no. The old blossoms won't prevent anything. No.
Okay. Yeah, you just don't want to you want to prune them within a couple of weeks after
bloom. They bloom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thanks.
Before they set buds.
So not pruning, you're not going to hurt anything. It's just good. They're going to get a little taller. So.
Here is a text that actually a lawn question besides Creeping Charlie. Is it too late to winter sow? I assume they mean
winter. That's
winter
dormant
sowing.
Seeding.
Dormant seeding.
Yeah, dormant seeding. So normally we recommend that in early December. Actually, you can do that right now. The thing is, you want to do it on pretty much bare soil. So if you're doing it on top of the snow, it's really uncertain where that seed is going to end up.
The mice will be so happy.
Oh, yeah, the mice will be so happy.
And the birds.
Right, birds, voles, things like that. So unless you can actually get it into the soil with contact with the soil right now, I would say it's too late.
Okay. Julie, what is that kind of a daisy that Texter is writing
like
about?
Like a berry daisy.
About mildew. What to do about mildew on that
mildew
daisy?
Mildew on that daisy. Yeah, they're susceptible to powdery mildew. And usually it comes from it's an air circulation. Those have pretty dense crowns. So you can remove some of the lower leaves a little bit to allow for some air at the soil. And then be careful about watering the leaves. Just water at the base of the plant. Water the soil. Make sure it drains really well. And then be sure that it's in a nice sunny location so it actually is drying out a little bit between watering. And that might help a little bit. Yeah, you can put a fungicide on it. And if it's a plant in a pot, you could do that. But most people don't want to do that in their houses. They don't want to use chemicals necessarily.
Okay. Thank you. Chris is calling in from Blaine, I believe, with a question. Chris, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hi, thanks. I've got a cabin up on Lake Superior, and I planted Mugo pine a lot of years ago, and there is a huge root system, but there's also probably four-fifths of it is just giant mugo pine branches. And I know that the root system, you know, the bark and the root is getting really big up above the soil. Is there anything safely that, because they're healthy as can be, is there anything I could do to cut down the size, and would it help the mugo pine to, you know, to be growing down deeper towards the soil again to fill that bottom out?
So I would not do anything, Chris. I think that your plant has made do with the shallow soil and the rocky conditions that you've got, because your concern to us has really been the roots are so big and I can see them and everything, but the top of the plant looks great. I mean, so healthy. So I think the plant's okay. You might not feel as good as the plant does.
And it may have been limbed up maybe by some deer or something when you weren't there during the winter. So that may be why you're seeing some of the emptiness between. But yeah, it sounds they want to be nice big plants, so it sounds happy.
Texter is really a comment more than a question. A deep freeze is going to help reduce the dreaded Japanese beetle grub. Is that true?
Don't count on
it. Really?
No.
Not necessarily.
No, the only thing that might affect grubs, at least the early populations, is maybe some dryness, some drought. And as we were talking off air, then we have an issue with our plant health. So it's kind of a, you know, a balancing act there. But probably not. Those grubs are quite a ways deep in the soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have a question for Julie, Mary, or Teresa, call it in or text it in, like Tom is calling in from Apple Valley. Tom, what is your question, please?
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, actually, hi. Good morning. I actually have a couple questions. I've been cutting a lot of buckthorn south of Hastings.
Great.
And as I'm cutting the buckthorn, I've been encountering several wild euonymus plants.
You want to get rid of those too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So why? So as an ornamental, we have a euonymus plant in our front of our house in Apple Valley. Why would I want to get rid of a euonymus?
You've seen it where the buckthorn is, so it's aggressive and it's self-seeding out there. So think of it as a lesser buckthorn problem.
It's on the watch list.
It is
for
on the watch
our,
list.
Minnesota noxious weed. Yeah. And,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's because it seeds so much.
So we're talking about the burning bush.
Burning
here, right?
Bush, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The euonymus, it gets that bright red color, has a very distinctive, corky, ridged bark, so you can tell what it is. But yes, it's not as aggressive as buckthorn, but it does have the seeds.
Yeah. So in your home, it's probably not a problem. If it's out in the wild, if you live near
a wild area,
then that's where you have to really be proactive and take care of the wild area around you.
And that's the same with, we have 26 varieties of barberry that have long time been available in the retail sector. And they're now on the noxious weed list because they're so seedy. And it's not that you have to take them out in your landscape. That's your choice. But when you find it out in a naturalized area like a woodland, then you want to be sure that you're removing that. Or you can report that. The Minnesota Department of Ag has a site called Arrest the Pest, and you can call it in or you can send a photo and email it into them as well.
So the plant that's out there in the wild that grew from a seedling is probably a vigorous seedling that can set a lot more seedlings. Mm-hmm. So the ones that we get out in the wild tend to be the ones that are the good seeders. So that's when you eliminate them, you eliminate a lot of the problem. Where in our home landscapes, like the little crimson beauty, I used to have that hedge of that till the bunnies ate it off.
That's one control measure.
They do enjoy that.
I rarely saw seedlings of that, the crimson pygmy. So, as Julie said, there are many different kinds, but it's very likely when you see those plants out in the wild, they got there because it was a good, tough seed, and that will have their propensity to seed again.
Good point.
All right. Let's see who is next. Mary is calling in from New Prague, I believe. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about Maximilian sunflower. It's a perennial. It returns year after year, and it can get 3 to 10 feet tall. Do you know much about it?
Yes, it's one of our great natives. It's a distinctive sunflower. It has those really long lance, kind of curvy, droopy leaves, and then does have a nice sunflower on it, and it can be that huge thing that stands way above everything in the prairie. So it's a great prairie plant, would be good for pollinators, and it's going to flower late in the year. It's September when that flowers. So that's a nice plant, Mary.
Okay.
So it could be good for seeding the, feeding the birds in the winter if you leave
could
it
be.
Standing.
Yeah, that's right.
It would have seeds.
It tends to have not the giant sunflower that we think of that's the annual. It tends to have a smaller one, but it often will flower at the leaf axils. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a lot of flowers on it.
Yeah. Also, it'll give you some winter interest if it's standing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mary. I'm going to grab some text messages after Kim in Minneapolis' phone call. Kim, what's your question this morning?
It's Ken.
Ken, sorry.
I have an ash tree in my backyard. It's a majestic, beautiful, glorious tree. And I'm wondering about the viability of chemical treatment for the prevention of emerald ash borer. I've talked to some tree services, and some of them are recommending. I'm getting mixed messages, so just thoughts on treating for emerald ash borer.
Yeah, so Minneapolis, it's taking them out. They're taking most of the ashes out, Ken. And so it comes down to if it's a beautiful specimen tree, you want to treat it or you want to remove it. So that's a tough call, but that's the inevitability of the emerald ash borer.
Yeah, and I think that also you can there's a thought process that the MDA, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, has put together, and it's how do I decide what to do about my ash?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you visit their website, you can go through that thought process, and it will help you to kind of make a decision. One of the things about treating it is it's an annual cost that you're going to have to endure every, as long as you want to keep that tree.
So where are you, Ken? Are you still there? Ken, where is your ash tree?
It's in the backyard. It is probably 100 years old. It's
Minneapolis?
Yes.
So Hennepin County.
Yeah, Hennepin County, Minneapolis. So, so you could talk to the local folks in the city of Minneapolis, but they're pretty much have made the decision. They're removing ash trees. So your case, it's your own property, so I'm sure they're going to recommend that you use the treatment. The preventative treatment lasts for 2 or 3 years. You do it repeatedly. It's not 100% certain, but there are trees all around you that have been exposed to the emerald ash borer.
And having a big ash tree, you have to figure out how is that tree helping your landscape,
right.
The birds. Is it shading your house, helping you with your energy? Property values. Mature trees are very, very good for your property. But if you have to take it down, if it does get the borer, then that's a huge expense. So there's all these things you have to worry about. We don't have a good, this is what you should do answer.
It's a couple $100s. I use that figure roughly, a couple $100s to treat it.
Treating.
It really varies. Every tree is different with the size and the amount of chemical needed. Mm-hmm. But you can treat it for several years versus the couple thousand to remove it.
All right, let's go back to the text messages. Planted some tulip bulbs last fall, texter says. Some around peach trees in the yard. Mm. Worried about survival without snow covering and the cold.
I think you're going to be okay because the tulips should be 4 to 6 inches down in the soil. It stays 32 degrees in the soil. It freezes at 32. It will stay right around 32. So we'd like to have the snow cover, but the tulips should be fine.
If you planted them at the right depth, they should be okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd be more concerned about the squirrels eating them.
And I thought the question was going to be about the peach tree.
Yeah.
Poor peach trees.
Well, guess what? Excuse me. We have another comment about Creeping Charlie. Creeping Charlie just needs a makeover, Texas says.
It does.
Call it what the British do, ground ivy.
Oh, yes.
They like it.
They like it. Yep.
And there you have it.
All right, here's the question for all three of you. You can join in. What is a good ground cover for for sandy shady areas? Maybe it's the same answer.
I think Canadian ginger would work there.
Yes, that's a wild ginger. That would work there.
It's not very creepy,
right? There's another. Mint is the Lamium. Mm-hmm. Lamium is pretty aggressive mm-hmm. as well. We think of sandy soils as being good for the junipers as ground covers. Shady, not so good.
Yeah, Pacassandra might work.
Oh, Pacassandra
except
might
that
work.
Might need some amendment to the maybe adding compost into that planting mm-hmm. site. But yeah. that's a shade-loving.
You know, and this might be a good time to mention, Mary, many years ago, helped the Master Gardeners in Minnesota organize a book called Best Plants for 30 Tough Sites.
Oh, yeah.
And you can buy that book mm-hmm. or you can download it for free online. And I'd love Mary to redo that book.
Master Gardeners helped with that. And
they
there
did.
Is yeah. there's yeah. the sandy soil. The yep. Anoka County Master Gardeners did the sandy soil.
Yeah,
so that was fun.
That's
yeah.
a really good, you know, what can grow under my walnut
the
tree,
best
what
plants
what,
for best 30, plants, 30 tough
30
sites.
Tough sites.
It was the 30th
anniversary. And I love that book, Mary.
Yeah. And you can find it on the website.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which
we haven't mentioned yet.
Now, before we break, let's do that. What's the website that's so good?
It is extension.umn.edu. And click on the Yard and Garden tab, and you can, or you can just Google "best plants for 30 tough sites," and you can find it there too.
Outstanding. All right, we have more show to come, so don't go away. If you have a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in 651-989-9226. There is a line open. Or again, if it's easier, send a text 81807. We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Julie, Mary, Teresa, all in studio, helping you out. We have callers. We have texters. Boy, a lot of city folks, texter says this because you were talking about straw mm-hmm. and hay. A lot of city folks think straw and hay are the same.
They do.
Okay.
But they're not.
Okay. Straw is the bedding you would use for your animals and what you use for mulch. Hay is what you feed the animals.
You know what we always like to do on this show every week, we try to do that, is talk about a great place called the Arboretum.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
You guys love that, yep. like a lot
we
of our
we love that,
do.
And mm-hmm. there's a lot going on at the Arboretum, even in the winter. If we do get some snow now, the ski trails will be open. Mm-hmm. The snowshoe trails, hiking trails are open. You can walk around at the Arboretum, but a week from today is the flower show. So the whole month of February, we have a beautiful flower show going on out there. We have 9 different countries that will be represented with the plants from those countries and little vignettes that you can visit. And then some art and sculpture that will go along with that. So that will be fun. There are also tours this weekend, actually. You want to check with the Arboretum about the tours for the Harrison Sculpture Garden in the winter with the sculptures. But due to the weather conditions, you want to make sure those tours will still be happening because of the cold this weekend.
Just like you gardeners, there's something going on 52 weeks a year.
Exactly.
Never ends.
Yeah, like Smart Garden.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. The show. We're around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jim is calling from, I think, Independence. Jim, you're on CCO. Thanks for waiting.
Denny, thanks for taking my call. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Well, Mary, Teresa, Julie, I was wondering, could you go over chelates and how to apply them so that they get absorbed best and when to apply them? And then also, is there like a bacteria or something you can add to mulch to accelerate its availability to the plants as food?
Okay, so chelate, this is a form of, usually we talk about this with iron and the availability of iron, and this is usually higher pH soils don't necessarily have that availability of iron. Well, first of all, I guess I wouldn't use any iron unless you've got a soil test that shows you need it. And sometimes this will come out in lawns. We do see lawn fertilizer that talks about chelated iron and availability of iron, and there are different forms of that. It's complicated with what's available, and it's often the soil pH that's affected by that. But I would recommend you start with a soil test for that. The other question was, do you need additional bacteria for decomposition?
I think that was the breaking down mulch?
Usually not. No. Usually there's such ubiquitous, huge numbers of bacteria. That's not a limiting factor. You can always put some extra on, but usually that's not the limiting, right?
Yeah, and actually if soil itself has so many microorganisms mm-hmm. in it that it's breaking stuff down all the time.
A shovel full of soil. That's, you know, rather than buying even something for your compost
bin,
throw some your soil in there,
right. And those chickens.
And the chickens.
The freeloading chickens.
The freeloading chickens.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Rick is calling from Brooklyn Park. Rick, we're all listening. What's your question, please?
Yeah, hi. I live in Brooklyn Park there, and it was known for growing potatoes mm-hmm. for Brooklyn Park at one time. And I got a backyard. I've got a garden that has, I've grown potatoes in it about the last 5 years in the same area. And I have a feeling I'm using up the something in the soil. And I want to know, because my yield is getting smaller and smaller every year. And last year, the potatoes were about as big as quarters, you know?
Yep. So Rick, trust your instincts. You are 100% correct. You need to rotate your crops. You're growing the same family of plants in the same place every year, uses the same nutrients out of that, and can harbor the same diseases, so you can start seeing diseases. So you don't want to put your tomatoes there or your peppers there either. They're all in the same family. You need to put something else. They're green beans or something, or lettuces or beets or something. Move the potatoes to another area. And, of course, you could always get a soil test.
Right. The soil test is the way to go. Potatoes are big, heavy feeders. They mm-hmm. love that sandy or light soil. Heavy, heavy feeders at high nitrates. You can actually read about this in the news through the central part of Minnesota, where the big sand plains are, and the potato production there has increased the nitrates in the soil, water. Water, especially. So that's a fact of life with potatoes. They're just big, heavy feeders. Mm-hmm. So, but rotation mm-hmm. is your first and easiest thing to do.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Texter says, can I transplant my azalea bush and how do I prevent harming it?
Well, I'm going to guess that's a house plant, azalea.
No, azalea bush outside.
You did say bush. That makes me think it is it's already alive.
But why would you be concerned about transplanting it now?
Well, next, because
in the spring.
They're thinking in the spring.
They're thinking ahead.
So if it's outdoors, yes, you can transplant it. Be sure that you are transplanting it into soil that has the proper pH, because they are plants that prefer an acid-loving environment, mm-hmm. and so they want a lower pH on that soil. If you're talking about a houseplant, you can transplant that anytime.
All right. Yeah. Trying to be proactive, Texter says, with Japanese beetle infestation. Anything I can do before they appear? Any idea?
No. No, there's really nothing.
No.
There's really
throw
nothing
up your
to
hands.
Right,
just wave the white flag. Give it up.
Give it up. Although, before they appear, you can read the new information.
Yes, you
just
can.
Came out.
Yes.
Yeah, because we have a new updated brochure on the Japanese beetles on the Yard and Garden blog. So go to extension.umn.edu and click on Yard and Garden, and you'll see the news, Yard and Garden news there. And that's one of the first items is the new information. But hand-picking the adults and try to get rid of them when you're the first ones that you see may eliminate some of the others. But it's tough, and it's not the worst thing to happen to have Japanese beetles.
And invite those birds in your yard so the birds see all the motion and maybe start eating the beetles. That will really help. You know, grow a variety of plants in your yard. Just try to make your yard sustainable so things even out. Beetles are here. We have to deal with it.
The interesting thing about the beetles, too, is that the more they feed and the more beetles are attracted.
Mm-hmm.
The plants ironically put out an attractant to entice other feeders. Yeah. And so it's important that you get out into the garden early in the season and that you're watching for that and that you're hand picking those beetles to minimize that plant damage.
Yeah.
God, this has been really fun.
It's
the end of the show. We have probably 30 seconds to go.
We're not giving it up, Denny.
No, that's fine. I'll go out for coffee. You guys take over. What's that website again?
extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden.
And if you want to get to the Arboretum, the best direction?
Get to the Arboretum. Yes, it's just west of the city, just west of the intersection of 41 and 5. The big flower show is coming for the whole month of February. Great place to walk and always plants inside. Beautiful destination, the Arboretum.
It's just a great location. I'd like to go there this weekend myself.
And there's often master gardeners there to answer your questions, too.
Yes, on the weekends.
Thank you all. We'll see you individually next time here on News Talk 830 WCCO.